Welcome to this special edition of Morning Magazine for Friday, March 11th of 2022. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. I'm joined in studio with Shannon Young and Rosanna Longo-Better. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. On today's program, a local author has donated copies of her book about empathy and solidarity. After that, a CU Boulder sociologist discusses Ukraine and gas prices. Then we hear from CU Boulder students about the opportunity to get hands-on radio training at KGNU. Finally, our regular segment from .org, spotlighting the work of a local nonprofit organization every Friday. At 8:30, Connections comes your way. As always, the phone lines will be open and your calls are welcome. Then at 9:30, we will hear 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead, but first, these local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
The Douglas County School Board will be holding a special meeting today to discuss whether School Board President Mike Peterson will be appointed to handle strategic recommendations in response to litigation currently against the board. A Douglas County resident filed a lawsuit in February claiming board members violated open meeting laws by meeting one-on-one prior to the firing of school superintendent Corey Wise. The lawsuit specifically names the conservative members of the board, which includes Becky Myers, Kaylee Winnegar, Christy Williams, and Peterson. Earlier this week, District Court Judge Jeffrey Holmes found the board members collectively fired Wise outside of public purview and issued a preliminary injunction ordering the members to conduct business publicly. According to the board's agenda, Peterson's appointment will cover the complete duration of the lawsuit, including any appellate proceedings. Denver's district attorney has dropped charges against the security guard who fatally shot a pro-police demonstrator in 2020. KGNU's Jack Armstrong has more.
Within the fray of multiple demonstrations, unlicensed security guard Matthew Doloff shot and killed a pro-police demonstrator in 2020 in front of the Denver Art Museum. At the time, Doloff was working as security detail for Channel 9 News. He shot and killed Lee Keltner, a 49-year-old hat maker, Navy veteran, and Blue Lives Matter demonstrator, in what he describes as self-defense. The Denver District Attorney's Office says they are not able to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. According to Doloff's attorney, the charges are going to be dropped through a pretrial conference later this March. For KGNU, I'm Jack Armstrong.
Adams County Treasurer Lisa Culpepper filed a notice on Wednesday that she intends to sue Adams County, claiming county officials have caused her reputational damage, emotional distress, and extra work defending against, quote, false claims, end quote, that she was derelict in her duties. According to the Denver Post, Culpepper's notice states she is seeking more than $1 million from the county in damages. Adams County Commissioners sued Culpepper last October, claiming she has mismanaged more than $200 million in taxpayer funds, including the accounting of $90 million in federal COVID-19 relief money. The county is also claiming Culpepper has failed to respond to thousands of taxpayer inquiries about the status of their tax bill and remittances to her office. Culpepper began her treasurer role in 2019 and is seeking to be reelected in November. The Denver Post reports Adams County is seeking a court-appointed receiver to manage county finances. The county's finance director warned the county commission in January a communication breakdown with the treasurer's office is jeopardizing the finance department's ability to complete a required state audit. County officials have expressed concerns that if they do not complete the audit, the state could withhold property tax proceeds, which in turn could halt county operations. Boulder's Police Oversight Panel adopted a set of bylaws yesterday that will govern the operations of the 9-member panel going forward. The Boulder City Council created the panel in 2020 in response to calls for police reform. According to the Daily Camera, the panel took a year to develop a set of draft bylaws and accepted public comments through March 2nd. The panel rejected public feedback that argued it should have direct power to punish or terminate police personnel, which panel members said was not an authority the city council gave under the ordinance. As part of the bylaws, the independent police monitor will exclude the name and rank identifiers of personnel before the monitor presents a summary for an open session vote that determines if an investigation will proceed. After the vote, the monitor will restore identifiers in closed session for members to determine any conflicts of interest. After a two-year pandemic hiatus, the Denver St. Patrick's Day Parade will return tomorrow starting at 9:30 a.m. The parade procession, celebrating Irish culture, will begin at Wine Coop in 19th Street and then will turn down 17th Street at Union Station, with the Sea of Green continuing on Blake Street and finishing past Coors Field. Parade organizers told the Denver Post the event draws an average crowd of around 300,000 to 400,000 people annually. According to the event website, many people are under a misconception that the city of Denver puts on the annual parade, but a group of volunteers formed 58 years ago is actually behind all the operations of the big event. Public transportation users should contact RTD for any changes or disruptions to bus or train routes. The Coors Field parking structure is open tomorrow starting at 7 a.m. for parade participants and spectators. Today's weather includes sunny skies with highs in the low to mid-30s. Tonight will be mostly clear with lows in the teens. Tomorrow's forecast includes sunny skies with highs in the 50s. The current temp in Boulder is 9 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine. We are in the final days of our spring fundraiser. Thank you to everyone who has donated so far. In studio with me today are a ton of interns who you guys are going to hear from later, and Shannon Young and Rosanna Longo-Better.
Yes, good morning, and good morning to the people who have called in. Thank you to Philip, who shares, "I support all the informational programs." Thank you, Philip. Thank you for helping us to reach this next matching grant. We have another one on the table thanks to an anonymous donor. We are matching the next 500 donated during our final morning magazine of the fund drive and the only connections program during the spring fund drive. That's going to be coming up at 8:32. We are in the morning magazine right now thanks to Diane in Boulder, who also called in. Thank you, Diane. Be the next caller at 303-449-4885 on this final morning magazine of the spring fund drive.
Here at KGNU, you can hear diverse voices and diverse perspectives from real people on real issues in the community. It is important for you to pick up the phone right now and call 303-449-4885 and show the love like Diane has shown, like Philip is showing, is showing up, is standing up, so that our community radio can continue providing the information that needs it and bringing the voices of the local people. Please call. Call. Go online and donate and show the love.
And Diane is actually showing the love to Rosanna. I see her comment now on the screen. She says, Diane in Boulder shares, she loves Rosanna's programming. Keep up the good work. As a community, we're very lucky to have you. Well, thank you, Diane. It's so nice to get that kind of listener feedback, that engagement. Do let us know also if you have a comment for us. Let the phone volunteers know that. Give us a call at 303-449-4885. Leave us a comment when you donate securely online at kgnu.org. And as Rosanna was saying, community voices, part of the community voices are people who are also authors, local authors. I think that you, any regular listener to the Morning Magazine or to the Monthly Radio Book Club, knows that we feature local authors. We let people share their work with a broader audience. And it's such a delight to have local authors come into the studio. One who came in recently has actually donated some complimentary copies of her book. The book is The River Between Hearts. The author is Heather Mateus Sappenfield, who came in last month driving all the way from Vail. Like, she showed up in the studio in person from Vail in bright and early in the morning before the crack of dawn. I was surprised that she had driven all this way. I thought that she was coming from Boulder, but no, she came all the way from Vail. And I said, you know, I could have just like sent you a Zoom link. We could have done this like over Zoom. And she says, you know what? The pandemic, I am ready to talk to people face to face. I want to see people in person. And she wanted to come into a community radio station. So she drove all the way from Vail to do that. And she gave us complimentary copies of her book that you can pick up at the basic membership level of $60. The River Between Hearts. We're going to revisit the interview with her so you know a little bit about this book. So start off by telling us about your book.
Well, it is marketed as a middle grade novel, but I am calling it a read for all ages and a read for our times. And it is based upon some things I saw when I was teaching in the Vail Valley in the late 90s. I would have new students arrive in the classroom that I knew were new to America. And you don't ask questions when you're a teacher. You're there just there to teach the people and that show up in your class. But some mornings I would come into the school and they would be gathered in the lobby consoling each other and crying because some of family members or parents had been deported the night before. And regardless of your politics, just watching those young people with no documentation and no family here, that's scary. And it stuck with me as an author. I knew someday that would be something that I would explore. And so this book delves into that, but it came to me at the middle grade level with an almost 11-year-old girl. And she showed up to tell the story of marching along the banks of a creek, angry because she'd had her own loss, and she heads to her tree fort and finds a stowaway there.
Explain what you mean by middle grade novel.
So middle grade is marketed because of the narrator specifically for ages 8 through 14, but it is definitely a read for all ages.
And you did beat me to the punch with one of my questions because this book gave me big like school teacher vibes, and so I was gonna ask, like, have you ever taught elementary school? So I'm assuming that it was elementary school.
No,
level?
It was high school.
Oh.
But I've taught guest taught at elementary schools, middle schools, high school, college, all of it. I love teaching.
Well, and this book is obviously based in Colorado, but it never specifies where. In your mind, is it in a specific location?
No, and that's pretty purposeful. So it is actually partially a love song to the Vail Valley, where I have lived for over 30 years. And we are a complex valley, and we have so many visitors and tourists that come that aren't even aware of this other layer that's going on underneath. And so for me, it was about creating sort of a bridge and an awareness between those layers. The biggest thing that stuck with me after that experience that I knew that I would one day want to write about is the luxury of indifference that I had had. And how in that goes on in classrooms where in the Vail Valley, ask any public school teacher, and it's still going on now in 2020, but any resort town or probably any town or city in Colorado in the United States. So it's something that I wanted to explore in this book.
And there's a lot of also class indifference, right? There's a character in the book who her father owns this luxury hotel. She has a pony. And, you know, there's just, and the mother who had been deported, or it's never like really specified, at least up until the point where I'm almost at the end. But the mother of Perla works in the hotel.
Yes.
And Rill, the main character, it kind of like dawns on her, and it had never really clicked before, you know, that she had crossed paths with Perla's mom, right?
Right, right. Just the way we move through this world without recognizing others around us as fellow people. And that's my main goal with this book, especially starting with younger readers, is to look around and say, hey, we're all people. We're all people. And, you know, we don't have to be best friends, but let's view each other with compassion.
And I'm wondering, on that topic of compassion, what else are you attempting to just communicate to younger readers about these different realities?
I think more just being aware, you know, younger readers, middle grade readers, especially, they're defining their world. That's their work. They define their world. And then as you get older into young adult, then all of a sudden the angst shows up and it says, oh, this is how the world is and how do I fit or not fit in it? So these younger readers are defining their world. And I'm hoping to just expand their view of the world so that it's more open and with kindness, not necessarily so closed. You know, kids can often get in their groups and be mean. You know, popularity becomes a big thing. And so I'm hoping that if we start young, we can start to open those eyes and create bridges between cultures and all the ways that people are different.
That was Heather Mateus Sappenfield, a local author. Well, she lives in Vail, but a Colorado-based author who came into the Boulder Studios last month ahead of her appearance at the Boulder Bookstore. You will probably notice as a listener that we have quite a few people who are doing their presentations at local bookstores who come in to the Morning Magazine. They will send us copies ahead of time. I'll read the book and we'll discuss the book. We've had Brian Buma. He did a beautiful book as well that was recent. And today we have available The River Between Hearts, the book by Heather Mateus Sappenfield, available to anyone who joins or renews their membership at the basic membership level. So that would be $60. Give us a call at 303-449-4885 or online at kgnu.org. We do have other segments to get to, but I want to just share these words that Heather shared with us.
The way a book becomes successful is via word of mouth. So it means the world to me that KGNU Interviews thus elevates local writers. Thank you. Thank you, KGNU.
And thank you, Heather Mateus Sappenfield. On to our next segment. Even if we would like to avoid the idea of war, the world's eyes are on Ukraine now and anxiety is high. A retired CU Boulder professor emeritus of sociology who was originally from Germany belongs to the local Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center, and he shared his thoughts on the Russian invasion of Ukraine with Rosanna Longobetter.
So what does it mean to be in fear of a nuclear war as we are facing now climate change?
Well, this conflict is a disaster for climate change for a number of reasons. For one thing, it increases the production of fossil fuels, and every kind of fossil fuel project which has been rejected in the future is back under consideration. It's going to destroy the international cooperation, which is absolutely essential if we're going to do something serious about climate change. Now, the problem is climate change is a slow-moving disaster in 50 to 100 years, but its consequences now are relatively small. Therefore, they're easily ignored, especially by the countries of the mid-latitude. And therefore, this disaster is being encouraged. And it's much easier to react to something which you see right at your door than to even a much worse disaster if it's off by 50 to 100 years.
So difficult, especially for the young population, for the youth.
Studies show that there's a high degree of depression among younger people because they feel their future is severely in danger, if not completely foreclosed because of climate change to a large extent. And that's very sad. It has very severe consequences for mental health, among other things.
What is the stand or the actions our local Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center that you belong to taking to call an end or a de-escalation of the Ukraine invasion?
Well, we have proposed an immediate ceasefire with negotiations between Ukraine and Russia and the negotiation of an agreement which allows the security and the independence of both countries. And if that agreement is adhered to, we think that no economic sanctions should be leveled against any country. There's a strong effort to punish Russia for what its aggression. I can understand that, but who has punished the United States for our aggression in Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Libya, Yemen, and the like? I mean, the U.S. doesn't get punished, and so if we only punish the Russians, that's not justice, that's hypocrisy, and it will not lead to any diminution of warfare. It just will lead to anger at the so-called hypocrites.
There is also an action that you take here locally on the corner of Canyon and Broadway at 11 on Saturdays. You can join an anti-war protest.
We usually have a sign which says climate action, not war. Now, we made that sign long before the present war, but it reflects our feeling very much that our priority should be on climate change, and we need to avoid war, both because war is disastrous, because war prevents us from dealing with the greater problem of climate change.
Professor, final thoughts.
You know, I feel the basic structure of an agreement between Russia and the Ukraine would need to be one where Russia withdraws its troops and compensates the Ukraine for the damage it's done and commits not to attack it again, and in exchange for the Ukraine agrees to remain politically neutral, to not join NATO, to acknowledge that Crimea is part of Russia, and to accept the autonomy, not the independence, of the Donbass region. I think that is the terms under which a end of this war might happen. I don't think if any of those terms are violated, it won't be a stable solution. And I feel that the proper course for the Ukraine is to negotiate, not to fight. They should offer a reasonable deal to the Russians in exchange for their withdrawal and compensation. And if they refuse to do that, they should not engage in violent resistance. They should engage in nonviolent resistance. Violent resistance will lead to the death of I don't know how many different Ukrainian people and the destruction of the numerous Ukrainian cities. That's not what is good for Ukraine. It's not good for Russia. It's not good for the world. And I feel that although the President Zelensky is a very courageous figure, I think he's sometimes carried away by his own heroism and his own sense of drama and is giving up a reason. Reason says that the negotiated solution should be, every effort should be made to that, and violence shouldn't be kept up to the point where it leads to the killing of hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian people. Those are some of my final thoughts.
I have been speaking with sociologist, CU Boulder professor emeritus Tom Mayer about the unpredictable implications of Ukrainian invasion in our societies. Thank you so much for your time today.
Very welcome. Thanks for having me.
For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo-Better. Please call 303-449-4885 if you are liking this kind of coverage of complex issues that are challenging our democracy, our economy, and the collective well-being, especially for the future, for the young people that came today to support our efforts here at the radio station. Call 303-449-4885 and show us some love.
Welcome to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits.
El Paso Movement, Engaged Latino Parents Advancing Student Outcomes, is a Boulder County area nonprofit that sprouted from a community foundation initiative with leaders wanting to close the achievement and opportunity gap between Latino and Anglo students. Tere Garcia, Executive Director of El Paso, explains why the movement's founders chose information for Spanish-speaking immigrant parents as a way to help children learn and thrive at school.
One way they decided to do it was tackling the information gap, meaning our immigrant parents, Spanish-speaking immigrant parents, were the ones that needed to have the information of how the United States functioned. It's not just that it's different. Sometimes it's opposite from their own countries, from our countries. I'm also an immigrant. What it was decided was to create a series of sessions, of training sessions, where we will give the parents information in order for them to really help in a strategic way the education of their children so they could get into schools ready and not behind or not afraid or anything.
Garcia explains more about the information, take charge, emphasis, and empowerment of the El Paso parent leaders.
You know, you and I know every single human has a brain. What we lack is the information. As soon as you give the information to parents, to kids, to whoever, you can move mountains. And that's what's happening. And we are very... Of course, some mountains are heavier than others, or, you know, in some cases, it's harder. But what we have found out is that actually the people of the community, when they hear what the El Paso Voice groups are doing, they join. In what way? They come and talk with the parents. They tell them, yes, what you are thinking is exactly what we're thinking. What you are fighting is exactly what we're fighting. So that the feeling of, hey, I am a member of the community. I belong here and I'm doing not just something for my child, but for every little kid in this community. And that's the beauty of El Paso, that we really are creating this movement where parents are saying, no, taking over, no destroying, no, here I am. So I can help you, and we all are going to work together to make this a better community.
For more information about El Paso and the organization's programs, listeners may go to the website elpasomovement.org. For KGNU.org, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You've been listening to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits. For more .orgs or for more information on this episode, visit news.kgnu.org. And that's all the time we have now for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Alexis Kenyon. Special thanks to all our volunteers today, Stacy Johnson, Jack Armstrong, Hannah Stewart, and Emma Martinez. And a huge thank you to Shannon Young and Rosanna Longo-Better for their contributions to today's program. Finally, thank you to you, the listener, for all of your support during our spring fund drive and for donating. If you haven't donated already, visit kgnu.org. Your donation makes a huge difference. Stay tuned for Connections.